The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this June 24th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. And you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It is the offseason officially across most sports now with so many things wrapping up over the last several days. And good news is we have things coming up, and today is going to be a lot of fun. A lot of different conversations. It's going to feel free-for-all Friday-esque today. I mean, there's just a lot of fun conversations to have. We had some fun ones yesterday and excited to get into that some more today. And joining me in the studio, as he does every single day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. Yeah, you mentioned it. A little bit of a free-for-all Friday week. You feel like everything coming up this weekend and everything coming up this week as you are, officially in a whole lot of this offseason talk. Don't worry, we're not doing the Mount Rushmore quite yet, but still a little bit more to talk about, but really excited to be able to dive into everything today. Man, there's been a whole lot of information released along winning percentages and inside of conference, outside of conference. We're going to talk a lot about that here today. Chances that Auburn has against ranked opponents this year, according to ESPN's post-spring way too early top 25, which both of us are huge fans of, and y'all know that if you are fans of the show. Also talking a little bit, not a full hour, but the baseball power half hour, if you will, with a whole lot of MLB talk in there, some news on the Atlanta Braves, and then there's a top 50 trade deadline candidates as a couple of teams are working their way towards the buyers, a couple of teams are working their way towards being some of the sellers. So where do some of the top prospects or where do some of the top players in the league stack up in that conversation? All of that coming up here in hour number one.
Yep, and with the content that we're having in less news, I guess, it's a lot more reactionary, a lot more interactive, and that's where you come in. That's right, you. The one listening right now, that's where you come in. Yes, you. That's where we want you all to be involved with what we're talking about. So phone lines are open all show long today. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Your thoughts on anything we're talking about or anything else on your mind. If you've seen it, if you've heard about it, if you've read about it, if you've talked about it, we want to talk about it with you. So give us a call. We'd love for you to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. You can give that number a call. We'll put you on the air. We'll talk to you about anything that is on your mind on this Tuesday afternoon. Or you can always shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067. If you have quick hitters there, comments, questions, anything like that, you can always hit us up in the On the Line text box as well. We begin today's show with a graphic that has been put out with winning percentages across college football against ranked opponents. And this is teams in the SEC who have been, of course, playing ranked opponents. And in the last 24 tries, okay, the last 24 tries for Auburn, there's a couple of more. It's not equal across the board, right? Because it's within a certain time frame.
Sure, here. It's the last five seasons, but obviously the teams that are playing longer in the seasons, right? The SEC championship playoff games, I believe those are thrown into this as well, because when you're looking at the top, those teams have played quite a few more SEC games than everybody else.
And it also, I mean, just how your schedule stacks up and things like that. I mean, it's not equal across the board. But in the last 5 years, this is how the SEC teams have stacked up against ranked opponents across college football. And there are some things on here that are not overly surprising about Alabama being 22-6. That's almost 80% winning percentage against ranked opponents in the top 25. Georgia's 22-7 at 76% against the top 25. I will say, though, the drop-off here is pretty significant to me, because you have Alabama at 78, nearly 79%. Georgia, and I'm going to round up on all of these, Alabama 79%, Georgia 76%. The next highest on the list is Oklahoma at 53%. That is surprising to me, A, that it's Oklahoma, but B, that it drops, 24% from Georgia to Oklahoma from 2 to 3.
Yeah, and that number you feel like is going to either continue to drop with the sample size still not very much when Oklahoma was in the Big 12, obviously not playing as many ranked teams, rather than in the SEC where you're playing 5 or 6, it feels like, every single season. You mentioned it, 10-9 in 19 games played. And then the team right below them, even more surprising, it's Ole Miss at 50%. But they're only 8-8.
Yeah.
Only 16 ranked opponents over the last 5 seasons.
You just feel like some of these teams would have had to have played more, right? I mean, you feel like Ole Miss only playing 16 ranked games in the top 25 over the last 5 seasons. I mean, I think Ole Miss and Auburn, who we're going to get to, I think Ole Miss and Auburn are some of those teams from the old SEC West that have benefited from the divisions being no more. Because Ole Miss and Auburn, right, typically ranked in the top 25, used to always play each other. Ole Miss always used to play Auburn, Alabama, LSU, right? You always played those teams in the old SEC West, Texas A&M when they got added. I mean, that was always a brutal schedule with those teams usually always being ranked in the top 25. But in the last 5 years, right, when those divisions have been no more, you start to pick up some of the Vanderbilts and Kentuckys and Missouris of the world on your schedule more consistently. Heck, look at Auburn's schedule this year. Look at it last year. When you're going to play on this year's schedule, you would assume Vanderbilt, Kentucky, most likely Missouri with the outlook that people have for them. I mean, you feel like those teams are not going to be in the top 25 and haven't been over the last several years, so maybe that's why Ole Miss only has 16 on this schedule.
Yeah, it's just with their biggest rivals, you feel like it still doesn't make too much sense.
Their biggest rival, Mississippi State, they're
right.
Never ranked.
Well, that's what I'm saying, them, and then, again, you mentioned it with like Missouri and Kentucky being sure on that schedule just about every year as well. We continue on. Also at 15% or 50% rather is Texas, who is 13-13. You continue on down the stretch, and if you're waiting for a specific team, hold on, we're almost halfway there.
Yeah.
Texas A&M is 9-12, 43%. Kentucky, 10-14, 42%. Tennessee, 10-15, good for 40%. And that rounds out the first 8 teams. Is there a team in there that we haven't talked about that seems very surprising to you?
That is or isn't in that top half?
I guess either one.
A team that's surprising is in that top half? I mean, Kentucky.
Yeah.
I think that has to be the one. I think that shows how good Mark Stoops has been during his time at Kentucky for them to be 10-14 against top 25 opponents. That's pretty impressive. In 5 years, Kentucky has 10 wins over top 25 opponents. I'm not a math major, and by no means am I a genius or even smart, I would consider. But 10 ranked wins in the last 5 years averages out to round about 2 per year, right? That's kind of how that works. For a Kentucky football program that has just never been great, for them to average 2 top 25 wins a year over the last 5 years, that's pretty impressive to me, Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, what more could you ask for if you're Kentucky? I mean, other than competing against Georgia and finally getting over that hump, I mean, you beat Florida for the first time in our lifetimes, which is pretty wild. You've taken down Tennessee at times. You've had your shots at these other teams. I mean, averaging two ranked wins a year at Kentucky in the last 5 years, yeah, I think that's good enough for me. I think that is good enough for Kentucky as of right now. I know the mood has quickly changed for Mark Stoops there in Lexington, but what else could you ask for in Lexington? That's the one that sticks out to me in the top half. 42%, 10-14 for Kentucky over top 25 teams. That is a shock to me.
The team that surprises me just a little bit is this very next team. The LSU Tigers,
yes,
at 35%. They are 7-13 in 20 ranked games. Again, we are reading over the SEC winning percentage versus ranked opponents over the past 5 seasons. And LSU rounds out at number 9, 7-13, 35%. Missouri, 6-12, good for 33%. Mississippi State is the next team up there at 7-17, 29.2%, I guess if you're rounding down the 29%. South Carolina is 27.3%. They are 6-16. And again, if you're still waiting on a team, don't worry. We'll get there here in just a little bit. Florida, 5-18. That number's a little bit surprising as well, just because of the schedule that they play. You feel like every once in a while getting one of those top 25 wins just naturally is to happen. They are 5-18, 22%. Arkansas is 6-11, 21.5%. And then there's a team in the orange and blue who is the 15th of 16 teams. Again, ranking, or the SEC winning percentage against ranked opponents over the past 5 seasons. I don't think you could have given me 10 minutes to sit there and think on this and given you an actual percentage. I think I asked you last night and you doubled this number just because of what thinking in the first 10 seconds.
I wouldn't have given you the record. That there's no shot would have given you this record that you're about to say.
Auburn, in the last 5 seasons against ranked opponents, is...
It hurts.
3-21.
3 wins, 21 losses.
12.5%. The only team below that is Vanderbilt at 2-17.
You know who those two ranked wins are? Actually, I know the one. Who's the other one? In the last 5 years.
They had to have both been last year, right?
Probably.
Alabama and who?
It wasn't Auburn.
Was Virginia Tech ranked early in the year?
No way. Right?
I guess that wasn't. I don't think it's SEC winning percentage against other
it's just
SEC
top 25
teams.
Oh, yeah. That's true. It is just against top 25 teams, which I don't know if that helps or worse.
It doesn't.
I don't know
it makes
that,
it a whole lot worse.
It makes it a whole lot worse for Auburn, because how many opportunities in the last 5 years has Auburn had against top 25 teams out of conference? Several is the answer to that question. Auburn is 3-21 in the last 5 years against ranked opponents.
And we're going to answer this trivia question that I'm giving out on the other side of the break here when we take it here in just a little bit. If you know it, who are the three ranked wins for Auburn in the past 5 seasons?
Yeah, don't look it up. See if you can pick it out. Think about it for a second.
It took me a while to think about it. One comes to mind relatively easily.
Yes.
Should we give them that one? I'll give you this one. Hopefully we're talking about the same one. Hold on, look at me. Yeah, we are. last year, Auburn and Texas A&M.
Yes.
That is Auburn's most recent ranked win. If you know, again, the text box always open, 334-784-1067. If you know that, we're going to give you a moment or two to think on it. Don't cheat. Don't look it up.
We'll give the answers after the break, but
yeah.
I mean, is it... I'm not even going to ask if it's safe to say. I'll just say it. That's embarrassing. That is reason for every other fan base in the country to point at that logo and laugh. Talk about negative recruiting like we talked about yesterday, right? All the Auburn fans are losing their minds right now because of recruiting being ranked 77th in the country, and it doesn't look like it's getting any better in the near future, right? And we talked about how Auburn hasn't forgotten how to recruit, but neither has anybody else, and the fact that negative recruiting is their go-to tactic right now, that's what they're using. They're using the fact that Auburn is 3-21 in the last 5 years against ranked opponents. 3 wins, 21 losses. I don't know about you, But that's enough to make me say, I just don't think I want to go play for that team. Not until they turn it around. Not until they figure it out. Because me showing up next year doesn't do a whole lot of good if they lose against ranked opponents yet again this year, which we're going to get to in a little bit as well, the opportunities that Auburn could have on this upcoming schedule.
And I think, too, again, I'm sitting here looking at the football schedule. I think this started after the year 2020. So I think this is not quite including this year, because 2019, you had, what, Oregon, you had A&M that year, you had Alabama. So I think that started in 2020, going 2020, 2020, 21, 22,
right, starting in the COVID year, starting the COVID season. Yeah. And it's been 5 years, and you have three wins against you have three legitimate wins. That's how I would describe it. You have three legitimate wins in the last 5 years. Because tell me a win that's not against a top 25 team that's legitimate that Auburn has in the last 5 years. Maybe there's a couple. Maybe there's a couple. I think Cadillac's first win was a big one, right? I think that's one. Were they ranked? No, they weren't. Were they?
Auburn?
No. It was A&M, right? That Cadillac won his first game.
Oh, no. Both teams were like
three and six. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were terrible. So, okay, I would put that one in there. I would put that win against Texas A&M as a significant win that's not against a ranked team.
Would you say that in the national media that's a big win, or would you just say inside of the...
No, I think to Auburn. Okay. Well, then, yeah. Even my point exactly.
Yes. The
my
fact point that exactly. That's a big win.
When both teams were terrible.
When both teams were fighting to get to five wins.
And the fact that Auburn has three legitimate wins in the last 5 years. Three. And what did they do with those wins? Nothing. They didn't do anything with them. You have nothing to show for it. Heck, most people probably don't even remember the other two.
And I think this graphic actually might be telling a lie. I think there's four. If we're starting in 2020.
Are they counting the COVID season?
Bonus point. The two that we're thinking of, and then if you're counting the bonus season, yes.
Okay.
So there, if you're counting it, there's four. But, yeah, otherwise it's three. But if you can name the other three, or the other two, and then the bonus point for Kentucky.
Not including
Texas A&M this past year. Auburn, 3-21. The only team below them is Vanderbilt, again, who's 2-17 at 10.5%.
Pretty bad, man. Embarrassing is the word I use. And the fact that Auburn, out of what, that's 24 attempts. Where do they rank on this list in terms of tries that they've had? Let's see. No, two, three, four, five. I mean, they're probably middle of the pack in terms of how many attempts they've had, wouldn't you say? Just kind of looking at this quickly. I mean, they're probably middle of the pack in the SEC in terms of how many chances they've had, how many top 25 teams they've played. And the fact they've got the most losses on this list, don't they? Yeah, they do. Auburn has the most losses by a lot. The second closest team, is it Florida with 18? It is. It's Florida. Florida has the second most top 25 losses with 18. Vanderbilt has 17. Auburn's the only one in the 20s with double-digit top 25 losses. That's crazy.
Still trying to find Vanderbilt's other top 25 win.
Regardless, the fact that Auburn and Vanderbilt are in the same conversation with winning percentages against top 25 opponents is baffling to me. Not baffling because I don't believe it. Baffling because it's embarrassing.
And you don't feel like the numbers are true, and then you sit there and actually look at it and realize how it hurts just that much more.
Yeah. Well, let's keep talking about this. When we come back, we'll give you the answers on who those top 25 wins were, plus how Auburn could maybe turn this thing around a little bit. You're going to have some chances this year. We'll talk about who those could be and how Auburn could get it done. That's all coming up here as we continue with the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
All right, we continue on talking a depressing conversation for most Auburn fans, which seems to be the way of the road recently for Auburn. But we're talking winning percentage versus ranked opponents in the top 25. Auburn has three, kinda, four if you count the COVID season, which I guess it technically was a season, so sure, we should probably count it.
So Auburn, if that's has 4-21.
All right, 4-21 is Auburn's record against ranked opponents in the last five seasons. We gave you one, the easy one, the one that most people would remember, which was Texas A&M last year at Jordan-Hare Stadium. But there are three more that we are going to talk about. We had a couple people text in. They had some, but didn't get them all. So we do start back with the 2020 season in the COVID year, which looked completely different, started late, right? It was weird. It was a weird year. But Auburn did get themselves a top 25 win that season, Mr. Griffin.
Auburn did. September 26th in Auburn, Alabama, Auburn beats 23rd-ranked Kentucky 29-13 to start the year off 1-0. You then lose to Georgia, win Arkansas, lose to South Carolina. You beat Ole Miss, LSU, and Tennessee all in a row. None of those teams were ranked, however. You then lose to Alabama, Texas A&M. You get the win over unranked Mississippi State before you lose to Northwestern 35-19. You then move into the next year, 2021, which seemed like a really good year to start. You beat Akron. You beat Alabama State. You go to Happy Valley, and you lose 28-20, but it didn't feel like one of those games where it just ruined all of your momentum or ruined all of your confidence towards the season. You fall to 2-1. You then beat Georgia State, which felt more like a loss than the Penn State game did, if you remember that one. Then there was the whole fiasco of which quarterback was going to start.
Oh, gosh.
And it was confirmed. I remember getting the ESPN notification on the baseball field, I believe, or in the dugout, that said that Bo Nix was going to be the starter for the LSU game in Baton Rouge. And I remember I was upset about it, but that was Bo's legacy game.
It worked out. Yeah.
With Auburn winning 24-19. However, LSU was unranked at the time.
Yep.
You then lose to Georgia the following week, 34-10. Then you take a trip on down to Fayetteville, where Auburn takes on 17th-ranked Arkansas. And they beat them 38-23.
Yeah, buddy.
For win number two.
And I do want to chime in here for just a second. For reference, in that Kentucky game in 2020, the COVID game, if you don't remember that game, that was the Seth Williams game. That was the one where he had two touchdown catches. He had the highlight play where he Randy Mossed the guy.
Yeah, and he held it up.
And he held the ball up above his head, and the photo just went viral, and it's everywhere. That's what that game was, just for a little bit of reference there.
Yes. For the 38-23 game, trying to remember if there was a I don't think there was anything too crazy that happened in that game that was overly memorable other than the fact that Auburn beat KJ Jefferson. You then go to the very next week, actually, where Auburn, back at home under the lights inside Jordan-Hare with Brian Harsin at the helm, scores 28 points in the first half. You only score three in the second, but you get the job done and you beat Ole Miss 31-20. Those are your three wins, and then you add Texas A&M in there as well.
Yep. I mean, I remember where I was when I saw that Ole Miss game. I remember the ending of it. I left the stadium for a reason, like a legitimate reason. I had something I had to take care of or something.
Were you in college?
Yes.
I remember the reason. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, a really serious reason. Yeah, we watched that. We finished watching it downtown, and it felt so bad, but Auburn got the win. And so it was like, okay, like, good job. You know what I mean? It's like, it just felt so, but you got it done. And so that's it. Those are the wins that Auburn has against top 25 opponents. Phone lines are open. It looks like we had somebody and lost him. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. Your thoughts on this? And, okay, now you got to name the losses.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, my gosh.
All 21 losses in the last 5 years since 2020 that Auburn has
had
against
the
top 25 teams.
If you remember the entire schedule, you probably have a pretty good chance.
I mean, just close your eyes and start pointing. You're gonna get one there eventually. And
Auburn, Georgia. Or Georgia, Alabama, Georgia, Alabama, Georgia, Alabama.
LSU.
Georgia,
yeah, and just
Oklahoma, Texas A&M.
Bowl game. yeah, I mean, season opener. I mean, just, it's just, the moral of this conversation here is that Auburn's got to turn it around. Auburn has to get this reputation off their backs because you and I and our buddy Jack Hutton have talked about this so many times, and it always comes around during football season where we have little to no confidence in Auburn. Not Hugh Freeze, not a specific quarterback, not a defense, not Auburn in general against top 25 teams. It just seems like the confidence for us is just not there. And the numbers prove why. That has to change this year for the Tigers.
Yeah.
It has to.
It hurts to think about. As we're going up, again, 3-21. You are 12.5% with the fourth win over Kentucky in the COVID year. But Auburn does have the chance to be able to help this number out a little bit. We're going to dive into ESPN's post-spring way too early top 25, go through Auburn's schedule, and talk about some top 25 wins that they can get. All of that when we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. And that's where we go now with Jim. You're on the line, my man. What's up?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask you a little question about Auburn, Auburn football program versus the South Carolina Gamecocks football program.
Okay.
Where they are right now. Between the two, Auburn and South Carolina, which one would you say is ahead of the game? Would it be Auburn or would it be South Carolina? Now, I know South Carolina's been very aggressive in recruiting, spending money, and that sort of thing in order to make their way up the SEC. And it just seems to me that South Carolina would have to be a little bit ahead of Auburn as far as the future of their program goes. And I was just wondering what you thought about that, and I'll listen.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jim. I think it's a legitimate question. I think it's one that a lot of people have started to bring up and at least make that comparison, right, between where the South Carolina football program is compared to the Auburn program. And my guess would be, Christian, we're going to hear something similar to that, and maybe even with other teams too coming up in a couple of weeks when we go to SEC Media Days and we hear coaches and players and all the media together in one spot. I have a feeling similar questions like that are going to be brought up, but I'll let you start your comparison on where Auburn is compared to South Carolina.
I don't think it's close, if you want me to be completely honest. And it goes in the way that I don't really want to go, but it's the way that I have to go. It's the fact that you look at a team like South Carolina, who had a arguative shot at the college football playoff last year. 9-3, Shane Beamer does everything right on the recruiting side of things. The game day atmosphere is absolutely fantastic. You're hearing more and more about it, and especially the night games. And I mean, you have one of the best quarterbacks. You have my post-spring number one quarterback in the entire country. To be able to get him and the ability to keep him a South Carolina Gamecock tells me a lot that I need to know about everything that he believes in Lenore Sellers with this program.
And again, that's one of my teams that I am very high on, much like Oklahoma this year. That, again, I, with the win totals, I think are going to go well over. And my answer is very much South Carolina.
What was their win total? Was it 6.5 or is it higher than that for South Carolina? I don't remember. Auburn's is 7.5, just for reference, right? According to several different online gambling sites in Vegas and things like that. I mean, that seems to be pretty standard. Auburn at 7.5.
South Carolina's at 7.5. Oklahoma's at 6.5.
As I pull up South Carolina's football schedule, I know we've done this a couple of times, but just on paper, I would be willing to say
I told you, I remember. I think 5-0 start. You beat Virginia Tech. You beat South Carolina State. You beat Vanderbilt. I think you beat Missouri. I think you beat Kentucky. I think you're 5-0 on October 11th when you walk into Baton Rouge and play LSU.
What a game that could be.
That could be 5-0 versus 5-0 with the rematch of, speaking of, South Carolina should have won that game last year.
Yes.
That was the pick six that got called back because of the flag.
Yes, yes. Oh, they did get hosed in that game, man. Their schedule, I remember having this conversation. We compared Auburn and South Carolina's football schedules this year. They're, I mean, almost reverse in terms of their difficulty, right? Auburn, we've talked about the schedule this year. And Jim, I'm going to address your question here in just a second. You look at South Carolina's schedule, the first five games they have to win. You have to, and they're so winnable for them. They're better than all five of those teams that they're going to play with only one true road game, and it's in Columbia, Missouri. You have to find a way to go 5-0 because the back half of their schedule is ruthless. Compared to Auburn's, where the front half is ruthless and the back half is very manageable, right?
Yeah.
You start 5-0 if you're South Carolina. You mentioned it. You go on the road to Baton Rouge, a Saturday night in October in Baton Rouge. We don't know if it's a night game, but it probably will be. That'll be tough. Hosting Oklahoma, hosting Alabama. ESPN says it's still TBD. But, oh, yeah, what the window.
Yeah.
See what that is. So at LSU, home for Oklahoma, home for Alabama, at Ole Miss, at Texas A&M, hosting Coastal Carolina in football, yes. And then Clemson at home.
LSU is a flex, so it could be afternoon
or evening
or night.
Depending on what LSU looks like at that time, pulling up LSU's schedule leading up to the South Carolina game. Remember, they open with Clemson. Florida's in there. At Ole Miss. I mean, LSU could very easily have a loss in there before Ole Miss comes to – before they go – is that in Oxford? Oh, I'm looking at South Carolina. Sorry. Look, we're talking about South Carolina. So they go to Clemson, host Florida, and go to Ole Miss before they play South Carolina. LSU will have a loss before South Carolina comes to town. But that could still be a very highly anticipated top 25 matchup. So this year, 7.5 for South Carolina is very difficult. But you start 5-0. Heck, even if you start 4-1 and drop one somewhere, you're going to have to win some games regardless. But to address Jim's question on the comparison of Auburn and South Carolina right now in terms of where the programs are, I think they're similar, but I think South Carolina's outlook and upwards trajectory is much, much better than what Auburn's is right now. I mean, you said it. South Carolina won 9 games last year. South Carolina was in the conversation late November about being in the college football playoff, which is where we wanted Auburn to be last year, and we still want Auburn to be this year, right? But one team did it, and the other team has not. South Carolina's recruiting ranking is 60th in the country, but they feel good about it because they know with more wins, they're going to get more players. Problem is, they're still having to recruit against Dabo Swinney and Clemson, who have decided to play on the same level as everybody else again, and that's going to really hurt Shane Beamer. But I think Beamer's a great coach. I think he's a program builder. I think they've rallied around him. They are going in the right direction. Auburn is not. I'm not necessarily saying Auburn's moving in the wrong direction yet.
They're almost stagnant.
They've stalled. That's the word. They've stalled. Auburn built and built and built. Winning 5 games a year ago just put an absolute halt to that. And you really have been stuck in that hole since. All offseason, you've been stuck after winning 5 games. So, Jim, I think Auburn and South Carolina are similar. But I think South Carolina's trajectory is just going way, way up. And Auburn has flatlined, and it's threatening to bottom out really, really soon.
We're talking about Auburn football. Again, we spent a lot of time breaking down the
the winning percentage over the past 5 years. And although Auburn and South Carolina do not match up, Auburn does have chances to,
yes,
you mentioned, to right the wrong. Right now, you're almost at the top of a roller coaster, and everything broke down. And right before you got over the hump and started going back down with your hands up, everybody, you got the please exit. And you had to sit there and walk down the stairs because you're, yep, just sitting there and you don't know what the cart's about to do. Auburn does have chances, a lot of chances, to right some of these wrongs. Again, if you missed it, Auburn is 3-21, not including the COVID win over Kentucky in the 24 games against ranked opponents. Looking at ESPN's post-spring way too early top 25, Auburn, as of right now, will have four chances to right that wrong, or to at least begin to steer those percentages in the right direction. You look at it right now, you have Oklahoma, who is pre-ranked number 25, Texas A&M, who is 23rd, Alabama, who's in the top 10 at number 9, and UGA, the University of Georgia, at number 4. First thought that I have is the fact of only 4?
That's kind of what I thought.
Only 4 ranked opponents? Like, you feel like there's 8 or 9 every single year, especially if you go and play in Texas or Atlanta, where you're playing one of the Big Ten opponents, and that's a ranked game like it was with Oregon or Washington a couple of years back. But as of right now, 4 top 25 games that Auburn plays, and 3 of those are the front-loaded part of the schedule.
Which just goes back to show how crucial it is to survive the first part of the schedule, right? LSU's in a different situation. Think about the difference in what Auburn and LSU have to do in the first 5 or 6 games of the year. I just got done telling you they play that game against Clemson in Death Valley at Clemson, not LSU. They play at Clemson, they play Florida, and they play at Ole Miss before they play South Carolina. But LSU and Auburn are in two different situations, kind of, in terms of their coach's job security.
Yeah,
I would say it's on the same boat. Wouldn't you?
Yes.
Would you?
From a coach's standpoint, but from an expectancy standpoint, it's very different.
Correct. Two different expectations for those coaches,
yes,
but both coaches have to reach their respective expectations. LSU's got to make a playoff this
There's
year.
Just a 3 or 4 win margin jump between the two.
Which is so sad, but it's true. LSU and Brian Kelly, who was there in 2021 since then, their expectations, I would think, would be to make a college football playoff this year.
You feel like they have to because they did everything they could to get Garrett Nussmeier to come back.
Auburn's trying to win 8 games or, you know, make a bowl game for
and
some.
And just hopefully be in that conversation.
So there is a 3-game difference at least there. But yet both coaches feel like if they don't get to those expectations this year, they may not be coaching there the next year. But where I'm going with this is that Auburn just has to survive the first 5 or 6 games because their expectations are less. You have to split Oklahoma and Texas A&M. You need to win the game against Baylor, and you hope to have a chance against Georgia. LSU can't afford that. LSU, I mean, I don't trust them to go in there and beat Clemson on opening weekend. On the road? Against Clemson at night? Absolutely not. Not yet. I don't trust them to do that. Then you have to beat Florida, who is feeling really good about themselves, and it'll be early in the year, so they should still feel good. DJ Lagway should still be feeling pretty good about himself, too. Then you have to go to Oxford, which who knows what the heck you're going to get from Ole Miss. What a crazy series that's been the last couple of years. Then you got to play South Carolina. LSU can't afford more than a loss in that stretch.
Because after that, you have Vanderbilt in Nashville, but then you host A&M, go to Bryant-Denny, you then host Arkansas, you host Western Kentucky, and then you go to Norman. There's at least one, if not two, losses in that stretch right there. So if you're saying there's one, if not two, on each part of their season, if you split that by 6, 8-4, after Brian Kelly said that he couldn't win a national championship at Notre Dame because he didn't have enough, and then Notre Dame's now the runner-up with Marcus Freeman, and LSU hasn't done anything since Joe Burrow and Ed Orgeron.
Talk about a difference, man. So that's the difference, is the fact that LSU schedule's brutal. They can't afford any slip-ups. Auburn is not to that point yet. They can avoid a slip-up or two. But the idea here, to get back to the main conversation, is the idea that Auburn will have their chances against top-tier teams, but it could be worse. The schedule could be more difficult, which is why I think the expectations may not be higher for Auburn compared to a team like LSU. Heck, even to compared to a team like South Carolina. But Auburn's schedule is easy compared to others, especially once you get through the first four games. You get to October, Auburn's cruising. Cruising. Once you get through Georgia.
There's a word in there that we like to use that I've wanted to claim. It's not quite the Christian trademark.
Should.
Yes.
Auburn should cruise. Be cruising. Right. But I'm with you. You read that and it's like Auburn only has a projected four top 25 teams on their schedule. And it's like.
And three of the four are in the first five games you play.
It's brutal to start. But if you survive it, that's all you have to do, Christian. Just survive.
Surviving gets you to that 8-4 spots, which is kind of the bare minimum that you have to have. If you win it, meaning 4-1 in that stretch or anywhere close to something like that, that's when that legitimate talk of being in the conversation of 9-3 and in the conversation of a college football playoff appearance. Not saying that we have to be delusional enough to sit on here and say, we're going to it. We're going to the playoff. But again, we've talked about it. Being the conversation in November, if you survive that early part of your schedule, you get to the bare minimum. You do anything above that, and you feel like you have a dang good shot at doing something pretty special and getting that trajectory back up to where it can be. And then all of a sudden, you start having those conversations, and it's very different to what the South Carolinas versus the Auburns look like.
And I'll say this too, because I can hear people saying it through their radios right now and yelling in their cars. You not only have to survive the first few games that are tough on your schedule, you have to beat the teams you're supposed to. How many times have I sat in the studio and said that? You can't afford losing to Vanderbilt or Kentucky or Missouri or Arkansas.
Yeah,
we've got to get past that. Auburn used to be that team. Auburn used to never, ever, ever stress about those teams. And now we do, because we have to. Those teams have gotten better, but Auburn's gotten worse. And that's a bad formula. That is not a recipe for success by any means. So that's where Auburn is. You're going to have chances to build your resume, prove that you're back, and then take advantage of the bad teams on your schedule or the teams that should be worse than you. Can Auburn put it together? We're going to have to wait and see. We'll wrap up hour number one after this. Phone lines are open. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. We'd love to hear from you. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes as we are looking ahead to what's coming up this week. The fact that the NBA draft is here kind of snuck up on me. I'm not going to lie. It kind of snuck up on me with just everything going on around the world of sports. And it starts on Wednesday. It's going to be Wednesday and Thursday, and we're going to have full coverage for you right here on ESPN 106.7 of the NBA draft. It'll be on after our shows are over, so be sure that you stick around, check that out. That's tomorrow and Thursday coverage of the NBA draft. And for obvious reasons, I think Auburn fans should tune in.
Yeah, definitely. I don't think you're expected to hear any names from Auburn on Wednesday. I think there's one, if not two, that you could hear on Thursday, but a lot of names that you will know in the first round, and we're going to break down a lot of that first round and into the second round a lot on the show tomorrow. But while we did, again, just have a couple of moments, wanted to take a look on, kind of recap the Auburn Tigers that are in the NBA and the seasons that they had. And you feel like it has to start with Walker Kessler, who at least as of right now, although plays on the worst team, probably had the best year, at least from start to finish.
Yeah.
of the Auburn Tigers, played in 58 games in his third season in the NBA, worked his way into the starter role when he was healthy. He averaged a double-double, 11 points and 12 rebounds. And again, although the Utah Jazz finished with the worst record in the NBA, you feel like he's definitely one of the bright spots, the bright points. And I feel like there could be a lot of excitement in Utah with the Jazz, a bunch of young kids that we love watching when things work out really well. And they're, again, a really young group, but could be really exciting to watch in the future.
Yeah, and then I look over to Houston, where there's been a lot of things going down over the last couple of days with the Rockets. Of course, that's where Jabari Smith plays. Mm-hmm. They just made a huge trade for Kevin Durant. If you listen to some of our early ESPN shows or our nightly ESPN shows, they've been talking a lot of the NBA trade stuff going on postseason, right, or after the season, I should say. And the fact that Kevin Durant is now on the Houston Rockets, and the Rockets traded away quite a bit, but Jabari Smith was not one of them.
He was not. Again, very battle or very injury prone early, battled a whole lot of injuries, did play in 57 games, averaged 12.2 points and 7 rebounds per game. But the times when you really heard his name a lot, if you're a casual basketball fan and don't have any ties to Auburn, was the Rockets in the playoffs, especially against the Golden State Warriors. Draymond Green praised Jabari Smith Jr., said that he played absolutely fantastic. Again, got a lot of recognition. We're a little bit disappointed that he stayed in Houston. You feel like everything on social media is free Jabari. But maybe with the trades, it opens up a whole lot. And with the style of play, man, who would you want to learn the game of basketball from if you're Jabari Smith than Kevin Durant?
I mean, I think they're so similar in their build and their style. I mean, the tall, lengthy, rise and fire over you, shoot it, pure shooting stroke, just a great finisher at the rim. I mean, that they are very, very identical.
A couple other guys. Isaac Okoro played in 55 games but had career lows, only 6 points and 2.3 rebounds with his fifth season, this time with the Cavaliers. Chuma Okeke also with the Cavaliers, and he's just a guy that cannot stay healthy, man. He only played in 12 games, averaged 5.9 points per game. And JT Thor, a name that you haven't heard too much of, his fourth season with the Washington Wizards, played in 20 games in the NBA, 3.5 points, 2.5 rebounds, but 14-6 in the G League. So the upside is definitely there.
Yep, more guys hoping to get to the NBA as the years go on, and hopefully Auburn can just continue to build a pipeline from the Plains to the National Basketball Association. Hour number one is in the book. Stick around. We got a whole lot more coming up in hour number two. We'll talk baseball, we'll talk football, and whatever else you'd like to talk about. Stick around. Hour number two coming up.
Is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this sunny and hot afternoon here in the Auburn Opelika area as we begin the second hour of today's show. If you missed any of the first hour, you know the drill. By this point, right, you know where to find the podcast version of the show, which we take our audio, post it on our station website for you. So if you ever miss a part of the episodes or the shows or an interview or just want to go back and listen to it, you can definitely do that by tuning in and catching it at ESPNAU.com. In that first hour, we talked about winning percentages for SEC football teams against top 25 opponents in the last 25 years. And where Auburn ranks in that, believe it or not, it's lower than what you think. And so we talked about that, plus some of the other teams on that list, and then how Auburn will have some opportunities to get right this year against top 25 teams, and kind of in comparison with some of the others around the SEC. Had a good phone call, good question comparing Auburn and South Carolina. So all of that was in hour number one. You can check it out on the podcast version of the show on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, going to do a little bit of talking about the MLB. The MLB Power Half Hour, a little bit of news along the Braves side of things as they beat the Mets. Now move to 4-0 against the NL East rival. Also, the top 50 trade deadline candidates, as some of these teams are now working their way to the trade deadline. Some are going to be buyers, some are going to be sellers, and some are kind of just going to be content. And who are some of those teams? Who are some of the players that are on the quote-unquote chopping block? And we're going to finish it up talking a little bit about the toughest places to play in college football. Again, with the EA College Football 26 video game coming out soon, taking a whole lot of rankings and stats and everything from all of these different websites. And where does Auburn placed in that top 25? Who are they in front of? Who are they behind? Should it be a crime that they're where they are? Or do you feel like it's relatively lucky that that's where they are? We're going to dive into all of that here in hour number two. And before we get into any content, we want to remind you that it's brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care. With locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you, you can find them online at the Orthopedic, or at the Ortho Clinic, rather, at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. Christian Griffin, Jacob Goins with you inside the studio. And the phone lines are open here in hour number two, 334-321-1390. That's where you can go if you would like to connect to us to be a part of the conversation or anything that is on your mind. The text box is always open as well, 334-784-1067. But the phone line is where we go to start hour number two. Was Terry. Welcome back. Starting hour number two with you on the line once again.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How's it going?
Good, Terry. What's on your mind?
Got a two-part question for y'all.
Okay.
Now, what is the contractual status of Hugh Freeze?
In terms of what he has right now for Auburn?
Right, right.
Sorry, my headphones were messing up. Can you repeat the question more?
The contractual status of Coach Freeze.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so as of right now, for what Hugh Freeze has with Auburn, right, he been here a couple of years. His contract was a six-year deal back in, what was that, 22, late November of 2022, making $6.5 million a year. It's also got the
retention bonus?
Yeah, it's got a retention bonus in there. I was thinking of the what's the word I'm looking for? You get paid when you do certain things and you win a certain amount of games and you get SEC
almost a stipend.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, you get paid a certain amount of dollars if you make it to the SEC championship game or you make it to the playoff or you win a national title and things like that. But yeah, he's making over $6 million a year. Most of that was guaranteed, but yeah, he's making about $6.5 million right now.
Now, this wasn't one of my questions, but what would it take to buy him out if that's the case, if they do make a change?
At this point, I mean, it was a six-year deal, so you are, what, 3 years into it, so you'd owe him, oh, goodness. I mean, you would have to, I mean, pay probably half of that, I would think,
as
right?
Of October 1st last year, it would have been 21.125 million.
Mm. So a little bit less than that, probably.
Okay. And the other question I wanted to guys, who would be the names to replace him? Who would be the names out there that are currently coaching for the Auburn job if a change was made?
Terry, what are you talking about? He's still coaching here. You're not calling for his job, are you, Terry?
No, I'm not. I'm not calling for his job.
I think the very first
talk out there about his dismissal.
I think the very first option on there happens to be somebody that already wears the orange and blue. Somebody that you gave a little bit of an extension, and we didn't talk too much about it, but I think this is a fallback, a fall safe with DJ Durkin as the defensive coordinator.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that hire wouldn't thrill me, but okay.
Let me flip it back onto you, Terry. Who would you want? Who would be on your immediate list? And this is hypothetical, of course, but if there is a change to be made, who is on your go-to call list right now?
Well, Rhett Lashley would be number one.
He just signed a big extension with SMU.
Yeah, I know that's unrealistic, but He would be my number one because he's offensive-minded. And where's Auburn's problems been?
Yeah, on that side of the ball. Yeah, you're right about that.
So, they're going to prove nothing by going the defensive coach. It's just not going to work. It's just not going to work in today's game.
I don't hate that mentality. Game. I don't disagree with your logic on that, but I do think DJ Durkin's a phenomenal coach.
And I know somebody's going to call up and bring up Coach Saban and all that, and that's fine. That's all well and good. But I just think in the long run, offensive coaches do better.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I get where you're coming from.
Saban was a rarity.
I do. I get it.
So I just wanted to know about the names because there's plenty of talk about his dismissal if things don't go the right way this year.
But, Terry, let me ask you this. You're not one – I don't think you're in this boat, but I just want to clarify. You're not hoping for that, right? You're hoping that Hugh Freeze is the one that turns it around, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I'm hoping he has plenty of success. And I'm hoping by the end of the year we can, you know, blame it on more on Peyton Thorne. Because quite honestly, I think he was a problem. His confidence level was a problem.
I don't think it was all on him, though. He was not put in good situations. I will plant my flag on that.
The situations he was put in that were good, he fell apart.
Yeah, you're right. He was not perfect by any means. It was a two-way street.
Offensive line, it was bad, but it was good enough to give him a pocket, and he chose to take off and run half the time.
Yeah.
So
he would take off and run when he wasn't supposed to, and then he wouldn't do it when we wanted him to at times.
Yeah, exactly. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Terry. Appreciate the call. 334-321-1390. Yeah, as of late last year, 20.3, I think, is what Auburn would have owed him.
I think it was 20.6 or 20.3 on December 1st.
Yeah, and so as the days go along, that buyout gets a little bit less. But, yes, if Auburn, for whatever reason, decided that today was the day, or whatever, you're talking 20 mil right now, if that's what it took to get Hugh Freeze to no longer be the coach here. Don't think that's happening, but to answer Terry's question, I think that's where that stands as of right now. There are plenty of options on people who could be the next great coach in college football, and I think you could zoom out on this, Christian, and not even talking about Auburn. I think just talking about who's next in line to get the next big-time job, right? I mean, we've seen some changes across the sport, right, across some of these big-time programs. Of course, Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. You saw Jimbo get fired, and now it's Mike Elko over at Texas A&M. You've talked about some of the extensions that we've seen across college football. Dan Lanning got his extension. You mentioned Rhett Lashley got his extension. We're looking at Ryan Day, who just saved his job by winning a national title. You're looking at Sherrone Moore up in Michigan. I mean, is James Franklin safe at Penn State? I mean, there's a lot of questions on who is the next great coach or who's the next up-and-coming coach in college football. And I think the second question to that is where will that coach go to be the next big thing to happen in college football?
You also, I don't know if you mentioned it, but old Dilly Dilly, Coach Dillingham, I think that's another really good option as well, making the college football playoff. But how far can he go at Arizona State? I think we have somebody else on the phone lines wanting to join in on this conversation. Daniel, you're on the line. Do you have a coach in mind, or is there something else on your mind here on this Tuesday afternoon?
Man, you just said Dilly, man. I was just going to bring him up, and, you know, whether it be here at Auburn or wherever, I think he can drive a Power 4, or rather a Power 2 program, to the next level. You know, I think about Penn State. You know, how long are they going to settle for?
Don't get Jacob started with
what are you talking about, Daniel? James Franklin's the best coach I've ever seen. The Nittany Lions are back, baby. James Franklin is a winner in Jacob's book. That's all I know.
James Franklin is a Yankee Mark Richt.
That's the best comparison I've ever heard.
That is really good. Yeah, that is really, really good. And I think we've had that conversation before in some aspect of – and appreciate the call, Daniel. We've had that conversation in some aspect about Penn State being in the same spot as Georgia was with Mark Richt. Like,
right, yeah, it was the comparison. Again, Daniel, great. Sorry that I stole your thunder there. But, again, Dillingham was the one that came to mind. And I'm going to get to him and why in just a moment. But, yeah, Mark Richt was the perfect example of your examples of why you don't think James Franklin can get over
that hump and why certain people completely disagree, say that he is the great coach, say that he's the best option. But you look at the risk, and it is a big-time risk that Georgia took getting rid of Mark Richt, because it was the 8-4, 9-3, 8-4, 8-4, occasional 10-2, but you couldn't get over that. You'd go back to 9-3, you'd go back to 8-4, and a majority of the programs in college football would have built a statue for an 8-4 coach every single year. You just got a little bit numb to it. And Georgia took the biggest risk of recent coaching, successful recent coaching, I should say, and now has arguably the best coach in the sport, who it took 2 or 3 years because he, again, took over a really good team, and it took a couple years to get over that hump, get to the college football playoff, get over that Alabama precedent, and now you sit there in any conversation you have with anybody, I don't think you leave Kirby Smart out of the conversation, out of the top three whatsoever.
Right. I mean, hindsight is always easier to look at. But yeah, Georgia clearly made the right decision. I think that Penn State, if they don't win it this year, I think you move on. I think you move on from James Franklin if the Nittany Lions don't win it all this year. Yes, that is the expectation for me on the outside looking at Penn State, because they believe this is the best team they've ever had. And I have a feeling that many Penn State people would tell you the exact same thing. There are some who are fine and settling and just want to compete and okay being around, but there are some who, at this point in their football fandom of the Nittany Lions, this is the best team they're ever going to have up to this point, is what they claim. This is the most talent. Drew Aller is one of the best quarterbacks in college football. If you can't win it this year, James Franklin may never win it, and that's where I stand. And I think there are several other coaches out there, too, who fall into this category. If Penn State doesn't win the national title this year, James Franklin should be gone.
I mean, it was almost the same conversation with their rival and James Day.
Ryan Day.
James, I was wondering where James came from. Yeah, Ryan Day.
Ryan Day's evil twin.
He'd be a pretty good coach, too. Wouldn't be able to beat Michigan. But true. But no, you feel like if Tennessee walked in and into Ohio Stadium and beat Ryan Day, then he might not even have a job, which is a crazy thought that he's now a national champion. Going back to Kenny Dillingham, and again, Daniel, sorry that I stole your thunder with him, but you've never seen a coach openly attack the NIL and transfer portal era the way that Dillingham has. And it almost came off a little bit weird at first. And you were like, why is he so open to players going and entering the portal? Why is he helping them? But man, I remember seeing him on social media, and the player would announce, you know, thank you so much, Arizona State, for the past 2 years. With that being said, I'm entering the transfer portal. And he would quote tweet it and would say, man, we're going to find the best place for you. This kid is absolutely fantastic. One of the best kids I've ever coached. And would mention out the skills and would help him find new homes. And it's just something that you don't see or hear or even think happens in today's day and age of the transfer portal, where it's eat or be eaten. You feel like he took a completely different route, and at least so far, it's led to a little bit of success.
Yeah, and it's just it's a tough conversation to try to put into perspective, because there's so many possibilities, and I'm kind of reversing here just a little bit about just who the new or the next generation of coaches are, who the next guys are. I mean, I think a very common answer is Brian Hartline up at Ohio State, right? A guy who...
Harsin, you mean?
Yeah, Brian Hartline. No, nobody wreck your car out there. Brian Hartline up at Ohio State, the offensive coordinator. I mean, there are several people that think he is the next up-and-coming coach. But trying to predict which assistant coaches are going to be the next great thing really difficult.
You throw Jim Knowles in that conversation too, Penn State's defensive coordinator.
Yeah. See, to me, he just feels like he's just bred to be a defensive coordinator. He seems like he is just built to be DC.
Which brings up an entire different conversation of, are we going to get back to the offensive coordinators doing the Gus Malzahn and stepping down from the head coaching position and simply becoming that offensive coordinator? He could be one of those guys that could be a head coach at a Penn State or wherever
but still go and hire one of the great offensive minds to where, although he has the title as head coach, he spends more time on the defensive side of the football.
Yeah, but I think for every Gus Malzahn that doesn't want to be a head coach anymore and just wants to be a coordinator, I think there is a Brian Hartline who I think probably does want to be a head coach somewhere, or there is a, you know, whoever, the Lane Kiffins of the world that were a coordinator for a long time that did want to be a head coach. Does that make sense? I mean, I think there's even in today's changing world of college football, there are still younger guys who want to be and are striving to be head football coaches in the Power Four somehow. So, I mean, it's nearly impossible to figure it out. I mean, when Nick Saban was the head coach at Alabama, you just started picking guys on his staff because they all went to be head coaches. But now, I mean, Sonny Dykes is a great example, but Tom Herman was a terrible head coach, right? I mean, there's so many examples of successful ones and not successful ones, which is why I think in today's era, it's really hard to take that risk. It's really hard for a big-time program to step in and say, we're going to hire this dude as his first gig until he proves it at a Tulane or, right, you know, like Willie Fritz, or at a UAB or a, you know, FAU or something like that.
Who?
Florida Atlantic, sorry.
Gotcha.
I'm uncultured, I apologize. I just think you can't afford to risk that anymore, which sucks, but I think that's where we are.
Yeah. Almost like the Saban tree there's not a new tree of the Kirby Smart tree or the Dan Lanning tree, because
right,
that risk just pays so much more risk than it used to.
Yeah, I think so. And again, I think it's a growing theme also of the Gus Malzahns. Like, coordinators just want to be coordinators. That's how Jim Knowles comes off to me. I could be wrong. Maybe he does want to be a head coach somewhere. I don't know, but He just gives off the vibes to me of, I'm a defense coordinator. I want to coach defense. I want to be that side of the ball. I don't want the title. I don't want the recognition. I don't want the responsibilities of being the head coach. To heck with that. Just give me my side of the football. Give me my position, guys, and let me go to work.
Especially when you're at Penn State making more than you would at a mid-major D1 as the head coach.
Exactly. So it's a fun conversation.
That brings up that entire conversation of offensive head coaches, defensive head coaches, and then the GM of a team that could very easily be the future if Auburn or anybody else decided to make that first step.
I mean, and then you start having the question, who needs to make the most money? Who deserves more, right? Is it the coordinators? Is it the head coach? Is it the GM? What are their responsibilities? How does that all get broken down? I mean, what a disaster that could be. Terry, we appreciate the call. It sparked a near 20-minute conversation, so we appreciate that. Lots more to get to. Some baseball to talk about, more football to talk about, and whatever else we want to talk about. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We continue after this.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
All right, we continue on here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We told you it's going to be very free-for-all Friday-esque. I don't really have a name for a free-for-all Tuesday. It doesn't have the same ring to it, but we've touched on a lot so far today. And we do want to talk a little baseball, probably more in-depth tomorrow in terms of, like, more Braves news and kind of some of the trade deadline stuff, because there is a lot going on. I mean, apparently my Red Sox are just going to trade everybody is what I keep seeing online about Bregman and Duran are, like, two of the highest possibilities of being traded right now.
Chapman's in that conversation, and yeah. Oh,
sucks being a Red Sox fan. I can't complain. We've won several titles in my lifetime. I cannot complain. I cannot complain. I cannot complain. I have to tell myself that. But, man, I'm tired of being a fan of a 500 ball club. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, well, if it helps, the Braves thought they were going to be sellers, big-time sellers. And then Alex Anthopoulos walked in after Acuna got back and said, whoa, 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 we ain't doing all that. We ain't doing all that. I don't know what you're talking about.
We're making a push for the postseason.
We're actually going to I'm trying to make a trade right now to prove to you that we're still taking this series or this season completely seriously.
At least they're winning games, though.
They are. They are quietly back, and it hurts to say, but you're quietly back to 36-41. You beat the Mets in Game 1 last night, 3-2, thanks to Ronald Acuna's solo bomb. And, I mean, the stat numbers are – or stat line's absolutely insane. Slashing 396 is his batting average. Has a 500 on-base percentage and an OPS of 713. That is absolutely – absurd.
Stupid.
In his first month. I saw that he has like 96 at-bats and already has 9 home runs. Like, it's absolutely insane to think that he's missed a quarter of the season and is now third in the NL, the National League, for All-Star votes.
That's
because
wild.
Of the surge that he has had. Again, the Mets are 0-4 against the Braves now, but dropping the series to the Marlins didn't necessarily help. Braves are 7-3 in their last 10. The Phillies, though, are 8-2. That's the only thing that hurts. That being said, we've talked with Lindsey Crosby. Might try and get him in to talk a little bit about this trade deadline as well later on in the week or early next week. But he says that that win number you're trying to get to is anywhere from 85 to 90, and I don't feel like that puts you in a terrible spot for a wild card. But, again, a lot of work still to be done, but you've done what you've needed to do as of late. I mean, Ronald Acuna has sparked back the offense, and the pitching staff now finally feels like they have a pulse. So who knows what's really going to happen.
I mean, you look at the month of June, and it just started so bad. I mean, in June, you started with 7 straight losses. Now, that was against the Red Sox, the Diamondbacks, and the Giants. And those games, while it hurts to lose them, they're not as important as these games you're playing right now, of course, in your division against the Mets and the Phillies and things like that. But I mean, the month of June, in terms of red L's and green W's, I mean, it's Christmas in June, my man. I mean, there's a lot of red and green on this sucker. It's just a little bit of everything. But you mentioned it. You sweep the Mets in the middle of the month. You take the first game against them. You've got 3 more to play at Citi Field. And one of your biggest series of the year is coming up at the end of June. This would be this coming weekend in Truist Park, when Philadelphia comes to town. The Phillies are in Atlanta this weekend. You talk about an opportunity for the Braves to turn it around right here at the halfway point. I mean, this would be the time to do it. Wouldn't you agree, Christian? This is the time to do it if you're the Braves, to take advantage of having Philadelphia in your ballpark.
It has to be. Looking at a website that I enjoy, it's called tankathon.com, and it's the schedule of the remaining schedule strength for each of these teams, and the Braves sit at 9th. Right now. So they don't have an easy schedule upcoming, but I think it's because a lot of that is with you still have 7 more games with the Phillies, you have 9 more games with the Mets, you still have 6 with Chicago, 3 with the Yankees. You look over towards the easiest opponents, you still have 8 with the Marlins, 7 with the Nationals. You feel like you need to go 10-5 in that stretch. You also have a couple with the A's and the Red Sox as well.
There
or the White Sox.
Yeah, the White Sox. And so the Braves are trying to turn it around, and it starts right now with the Mets in New York and Phillies at home this weekend. More on that as the week goes along. We'll talk some more college football when we come back here on ESPN.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz. On ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Give us a call. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Anything we are talking about or have talked about or are going to talk about, or something that's just on your mind that you'd like to get our thoughts on, or just kind of propose a topic or a question or anything really on your mind, you can give us a call, 334-321-1390.
If you can't tell, we talk about it for like 30 minutes, so your questions are very valid.
We will give you an in-depth answer and branch out several times. We will find our way back, but we love our listener engagement. And this time again, this time of year is when it's encouraged even more, just because there's so many possibilities of things to talk about. And so we have a rundown, but if you want to contribute to it, let us know. We'd love to hear from you. So call in 334-321-1390. Text box is open as well, 334-784-1067. And a conversation that comes around a couple of times a year, right, Christian, about toughest places to play in college football. And more rankings have come out. And there are some that are like, yeah, that makes sense. And then there are some it's like, ooh, that's kind of lower than I thought.
Yeah. And so this official ranking is, again, in the EA College Football 26 video game that's coming out in early to mid-July, and not prioritizing the game as much as their list of the top 25 places to play. Then, again, if you missed the conversation that we talked about yesterday, congratulations and shout out to the Auburn University Marching Band, who was playing the college football theme song as the game loads in. And that is Auburn that will be playing. So that's a really, really cool applaud and just kind of a nugget that you can think of if you are playing the game. If not, you, I'm sure, will still be able to hear it on social media when the video game does come out. But EA Sports has released their top 25 toughest places to play. And they take in all of this data, and they take in wins and losses, success rate versus like the actual home atmosphere. They've done some formula that goes into it.
Wait,
and they
does winning games mean something at home? Does that impact
you would
this?
Think that, yes, that does have some sort of factor of making it a tough place to play. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, continue.
It is a weird thought.
Sorry, I just had to chime in. I just want to make sure that that's what I heard.
Pressure washing adds like a win in there too, if you really think about it.
Yeah, upgrades or, you know, facelift and stuff like that.
No. But they have released their top 25 toughest places to play. And if you haven't seen, we were planning on talking about this. And then the Auburn social media accounts have also seen the rankings, and they've gone and made a post about it. And it's about 50-50 on the people that are happy with where the ranking is, and then the other half are asking for it to be deleted because they feel like it's embarrassing that you're asking for it to be a little bit higher. Auburn comes in on the second row, which, again, in the top 25, you feel like you can't necessarily complain. But as we have seen, and as much hurt as it gives all of us to think about and for us to actually have to say, it's not what it used to be. It's not as scary, Jordan-Hare, as what it used to be. And that is not all because of the fans. It's because of the product that's been on the field over the past decade or so, which doesn't really help the case. But Jordan-Hare Stadium is in there at number 17 in the ESPN, or the EA Sports, rather, college football top 25 toughest places to play. Your immediate thoughts when that comes out, before we go over the entire list as a whole: you are 10th in the SEC, Jordan-Hare Stadium, the 17th toughest place to play, according to EA Sports.
I mean, I think it's accurate. Tell me what Auburn has done in that stadium in the past 5 years consistently that makes it a top-tier place to play, one of the toughest places to play in college football. If I ask you that question about 2019, you can give me some answers. If I ask you that question about 2017, you can give me some answers. Heck, even further back than that, when you and I were growing up, that place was a death trap.
Yeah.
For Nick Saban has talked about how it was
haunted,
horrible to play there.
Yeah.
He hated it. Kirby Smart has talked about how it was horrible
to play
there.
The players, every single, well, not over the last two or three, but from anywhere from 2015 to 2020 on SEC Media Days, those players always get asked, other than your stadium, because that's always the answer you would give, other than your stadium, where was the toughest place to play? And just about every single one of them was, yeah, Jordan-Hare was not fun.
Yeah, Auburn and LSU were always, the Tiger Stadium and Jordan-Hare Stadium were two of the answers that were always given in the SEC. But over the last handful of years, I've said it. It's been just another stadium. It's a slab of concrete over there. One that, you said it, could use a little bit of a, you know, scrubbing, if you'd like to. And sure, adding the new video board, awesome. I think fans are very excited about that. We got our first view of it at A-Day. We've seen it now a couple of times in person. I mean, it's going to be awesome. And Auburn has done some things to upgrade the fan experience. But if you don't upgrade your performance on the field, doesn't really matter. And when you start losing games to Vanderbilt at home and California at home, you kind of lose all the shine. You kind of lose all the arguments that you have of, oh, protect this house, and this is our house, and this, they're not coming in here to beat us. Nobody is scared right now. Not a soul. Nobody is worried about Stetson. Georgia's not scared of this place.
Especially if it's later in the season and you're like, oh man, Auburn might have three wins at that point. That could be the 2:30 game. I'm excited to go play there.
They're not scared of this place. Georgia nor Alabama will be worried to walk in here this year. Unless Auburn is 4-1 or 5-0 when Georgia comes to town under the lights at night. Unless Auburn is a 8 or 9 win team when Alabama comes to town, then there's a possibility of Auburn having a chance to be a tough place to play, of Jordan-Hare Stadium being one of those difference makers in college football. But until you start winning games, until you get back to what it used to be, that ranking is accurate. And to be honest with you, Christian, I'm surprised that it's as high as it is. That's where I stand on it. When you let Vanderbilt come in here and beat you, you have no leg to stand on. None whatsoever. It's just another stadium.
Talking about the College Football 26, top 25 toughest places to play, Jordan-Hare Stadium comes in at number 17. And John in Auburn wants to get a little bit in on this conversation. John, you're on the line. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. All right. Here's an opinion here, guys. I think Auburn will be guaranteed to be, you don't make huge changes in a topic like this overnight, I think we'll be top 15 next year, and I'll tell you why. If you went to a game at Jordan-Hare before 8A this year, if you sat in the corner of the upper decks on the opposite side of the student section, it's quiet over there. It's quiet, and it feels
it's
like
also
high
empty.
School. And the reason is because all the sound's coming from one direction. I'm telling you, with the sounds coming from the new Jumbotron, it's going to make a transformative difference on noise level in Jordan-Hare.
That's not a bad analysis. That's not a bad prediction. I mean, it will definitely make it tougher. I mean, more speakers and more interaction and, more the noise kind of being trapped right in the stadium itself. That's not a bad assessment there, John.
So, if you just think about it, and I'll give you one example. When Vaught Hemingway in Oxford was being built, they had the triple deck in one end zone like they did now. And they had the Rhodes fans in the other end zone, and it was just a very small area. But what was interesting was the Rhodes fans were always amplified because their voices would carry across the field lengthwise and just reverberate off the triple deck and back the other way. So I think acoustics in stadiums mean a ton. And that's why Neville and Auburn Arena and all those places were built the way they were.
Yeah, I think
anyway,
that's
just food for thought.
Yeah, appreciate that, John. It's good insight on there. And look,
I was thinking he was taking the fan perspective rather than
I was too. But
it's a great point.
I'm going to add to that with the fan perspective because fans are not the issue here. Auburn just announced today that they've sold out their season tickets for the third time in a row.
Yeah.
With teams who are losing, with a losing football program, season ticket sales to the general public have already sold out for the third straight year in a row. Hugh Freeze had some comments about it today. He just says he appreciates the continued support for him and the team and the program and the future of what they're trying to build, right? They're not the problem. They're not the problem. But what's so encouraging to me, personally, what's encouraging about this conversation where Auburn is ranked 17th in terms of toughest places to play in college football right now, according to EA Sports and their college football game, right? What's encouraging to me is that it can be flipped like that. Auburn can jump back in the top five this year. I truly believe it because I've seen what that place can be. I've seen it. I've felt it. I've heard what that place can be at its peak.
And knowing that you get Georgia at night, knowing that you could get Alabama at night, where the entire country of college football is going to be watching, those are the perfect stages to do it.
And you have games in between there to build all the momentum that you need to become a good football team. Auburn fans have shown up for bad teams and given good environments. Texas A&M was a perfect example. We talked about that earlier in the show. Caddies win, right?
Even last year.
Auburn fans, they have showed up for a losing program, but they're tired. They're tired. They're over it. They don't want to cheer for a bad team. They don't want to cheer for a bad program. Sorry. This isn't Vanderbilt. This isn't Kentucky. This isn't Ole Miss. We don't cheer for losing teams because we just love it.
Or for three quarters.
Right. They want to cheer for winners. Auburn fans want to see a winning team, and they haven't seen that, but yet they've still shown up. They've still paid. They've still done all of the things, which goes into why this year is so crucial on about 1,000 different levels, but this one in particular is the fact that Jordan Hare is nothing right now, but within a game, it can be right back to where it used to be. You walk in that stadium 4-0 and you welcome Georgia, hello, you'll see it. It'll be retro. It'll be old school Jordan Hare. Doesn't mean Auburn will win, but the atmosphere will be like it. It'll feel like it. If you're 4-1 walking in to your own stadium when Georgia comes to town.
And that's given winning 2 of 3 with Baylor, OU, and Texas A&M.
Correct.
Which I feel like is a realistic ask.
I think it's almost needed.
It is needed. But I don't think that that's anything. We're not sitting there saying you have to go 3-0 in those three.
Right, right. That's a tall task. That's a big ask. But you will have chances for it to feel like old school Jordan Hare this year. I believe that.
Jordan Hare again, 17th in the top 25 in EA Sports College Football 26 top 25 places to play. Reading through this list for just a little bit, there's a couple teams that I do agree with where they are. There's a couple that I feel like there is absolutely no way, and it's the football team that carries some of this weight. Tiger Stadium at 1, Beaver Stadium at 2, Tiger Stadium being LSU, Beaver Stadium for Penn State, Ohio Stadium at 3 for Ohio State, draws a little bit of a question mark. Samford Stadium for Georgia, I don't think draws too many question marks. I think that's been an underrated stadium for a while, and now getting a night game, you're going to see it. That being said, Georgia being undefeated at home over the past 800 years helps a little bit as well.
Yeah, that helps.
Number 5, Bryant-Denny Stadium.
Wrong.
That's one that draws a little bit of question marks.
They have a good atmosphere in big games at times. They do. But they also have a lot of people there. They just stack that place. But post-Nick Saban and pre-Nick Saban, Bryant-Denny wasn't all that fantastic. I mean, I'm curious to see what they do this year at Bryant-Denny Stadium. When Nick Saban was the coach, they won all of their games. Didn't matter if they played in Bryant-Denny, Baton Rouge, or Mexico. They won them all.
That might have been why Bryant-Denny was so low, because it was like those high school teams when you're up 56-0 at halftime.
Saban was having to beg their fans not to leave. Yeah. They were beating people so bad, he was having to beg them not to leave at halftime and not to go drink at the bar. Like, that's how good Alabama was. They were begging you not to leave because the team was winning, not because they were losing, because they were winning so good.
Continuing down the top 10, Memorial Stadium for Clemson is number 6. Ben Hill Griffin Stadium for Florida, number 7. That could be another program or another stadium that works its way into the top 5 if Florida has a really good year. Gaylord Family, Oklahoma Memorial Stadium is number 8. I draw question marks with that a little bit. Autzen Stadium, I think, should be a little bit higher. They're at number 9. Michigan Stadium at number 10. You then go Kyle Field at 11, Neyland at 12, DKR Texas's Stadium at 13, Doak Campbell Florida State at 14, Camp Randall at 15, Williams-Brice Stadium is a place that I've been multiple times. I think they should be higher. South Carolina. And then Jordan Hare, Husky Stadium at 18, which I think could be a little bit higher in there as well. Kinnick Stadium for Iowa at 19, and Rice-Eccles at Utah round out the top 20. You then go Notre Dame, NC State, Oklahoma State, Michigan State, and Mississippi State round out the top 25.
Yeah, not too bad. I think that's a pretty respectful list. There's a couple that I would move around, but overall, I mean, you still have to have home field advantage. You still want to have it, and it can still be impactful. I'm going to read you these games really quickly, the home games that Alabama has this year, okay? ULM, Wisconsin, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, LSU, Oklahoma, and EIU. Of those games, so we'll take out the two cupcakes, Wisconsin, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, LSU, and Oklahoma. First of all, those aren't bad. Those aren't bad home games for Alabama. Where do they go in those games? Wisconsin, Vanderbilt, LSU. Sorry. Wisconsin, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, LSU, Oklahoma. Those five games. Wisconsin.
I think you're 3-2 at worst.
Yeah.
I think you start 2-0 if it's Wisconsin and Vanderbilt, and then you go 1-2 at worst, if not 2-1. So you could go 4-1 in those five home games.
Yeah. I mean, that's not bad. But then they have to go at Florida State, at Georgia, at Missouri, at South Carolina, and at Auburn. So I'm just talking from the Bryant Denny perspective, from their stadium as a whole.
Sure.
I mean, the LSU game is always crazy. They won't care about the Vanderbilt game. Wisconsin will be pretty good. That is an 11 a.m. kick, though.
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking at all their windows right now. Yeah, they have 2:30, 6:45, 11 a.m. for Wisconsin at Georgia, which is their night game in Athens, which is going to be absolutely insane.
The LSU game will be a night game at Bryant Denny.
It already is. It's confirmed to be.
Okay.
That is their one confirmed night game. You feel like everybody was given one confirmed night game. Tennessee at South Carolina and then home against Illinois are their three flexes. I guess Vanderbilt in there, too. So four flexes that could be afternoon or night games. But yeah, the Alabama LSU, that is the confirmed night game on November 8th.
Going to be a good one. Football season right around the corner. We'll take a break, come back, wrap it all up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. If you missed any of today's show, it has been a rapid fire, tons of questions, tons of topics, tons of conversations. It's been awesome. If you missed it, check it out, ESPNAU.com. We got a text in the text box, Christian. We got about a minute. We'll answer it there. It says, side question, what is Mario Cristobal's ceiling? Has he hit it at Oregon or at Miami? Mario Cristobal at Miami. What has he hit his ceiling? If not, what is it?
I don't think he has, because I think offensively maybe last year with Cam Ward, because that was one of the better offenses in college football, but the defense was horrific. And if you had any sort of defense, and he openly talked about it, he was like, if our defense could hold teams to 35 points, we're in the college football playoff.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel like that's a legitimate answer. Now with Carson Beck, you feel like there's not going to be as much mobility, but everything that Miami has spent and done in the portal, you feel like the fan base, although it doesn't necessarily show up on Saturdays, they've got some deep pockets, and it's done a whole lot. I mean, go look at what they've done in the transfer portal and at the high school rankings. I'm going to say that he hasn't hit the ceiling. I wouldn't be too surprised. I mean, I'm guessing they're a relative favorite to be in the college football playoff for this upcoming year because of Carson Beck and because of what they've done on the defensive side of the football.
I'll go the other way. I think he has. I'm not a Mario Cristobal believer. I think he's a good coach. I don't think he's a great coach. And I don't know what Miami is going to do or is willing to do in turn with all this new money situation stuff. You feel like they could only be successful, right? But I don't know. I think Cristobal has hit his ceiling. Maybe we dive into a conversation like that of coaches who have and have not hit their ceilings yet. That could open up a world of possibilities. But we are out of time here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We appreciate you being with us. We're back tomorrow, Double D Wednesday, and a whole lot more, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.